All right, this is Daryl from CD Baby and Indie Week, and if you're an upcoming artist, check out Go Produce.
All right, Mr. Daryl Hurst. Thank you so much for being here. Smartest, we've got Daryl Hurst. He has 25-plus year history in the music business, including launching and running one of Canada's largest indie music festivals and conferences known as Indie Week. He was recently hired as the Director of Market Development for CDB. He was recently hired as the Director of Market Development for CD Baby in Canada and past positions. Here we go, Grumpy Sound Guy. Big shout out to Daryl. Past positions of Daryl include design and branding / marketing for Live Nation as a freelancer, where his projects included a corporate rebrand and logo design, launching VIPNation.com, work for U2, Nickelback, Madonna, Beyonce, Jay-Z, and Dave Matthews. He was also a retail buyer at HMV, and then lastly, a booker for one of Toronto's top live music venues known as the Rivoli. Smartest, this is Daryl Hurst.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. Super excited.
That's a pleasure. It's a pleasure and an honor. I've done so much research on what you've been doing, and I can only say that I'm very excited for how this interview is going to unfold. Without further ado, though, let's jump right into the basics. All right. It's the basics.
Good music.
I'm glad you can appreciate it. Our grumpy sound guy likes to have some fun with our transitions, and that's what he came up with for this season. I giggled, not gonna lie. But the basics, what we're gonna do here is ultimately we just want to understand you a little bit better. Why did you choose music over anything else?
I have a feeling it chose me. Basically, since I've been in grade six, I knew music was the path for me. I thought as a performer earlier, but it ended up being more on the business side. But I just have known since grade six, I want to do something in music.
It was grade six. So almost you interacted with music throughout your life. And what happened in grade six? Was there a specific event or did you just reach a certain level of awareness?
I think it's just hearing songs on the radio, and I just wanted to know more about it. I wanted to be a part of it. And I don't know how to explain it, but I just knew music was it.
Music was it. Okay, so
that was it.
When you knew music was it, how did you start to explore that a little bit further? In case we do have some young listeners and they're like, I don't know, maybe I'm in that period. What steps did you take for that?
Well, going into grade seven, I saw that there was an option for music and band, and I went into that. And I wanted to play guitar, but they didn't offer it. It was saxophone, and I hated it, so I quit that. And I still wanted to learn guitar, and it took 3 years of me continuing asking my mom, can I get guitar lessons, till she finally broke down and just, okay. And then my first guitar teacher sucked, so I got a different guitar teacher after that year, and he sucked. It wasn't until the third guitar teacher that I found one that was absolutely amazing and changed my life. He could teach guitar, bass, violin, trumpet, trombone, saxophone, clarinet, piano, and I know I'm missing other instruments. Like, he was a master at them all, and I was very lucky. So if anything, it's the kind of thing of, if you have a goal, don't quit, because I could have easily quit grade seven, but it wasn't till like grade 10 when my mom actually finally got me into guitar lessons. And it's the kind of thing I just would not quit. I drove her crazy for 3 years. It'd be the kind of like, can I get guitar lessons? No. Can I get guitar lessons? No. Can I get guitar lessons? Like, I just kept going until she said yes, but it took 3 years.
Persistency. Yeah. I admire that in children. I see in adults a lot more. They're even terrified of getting that first no. But children or younger humans are just more eager, and they're willing to experience that. So I'm happy that you were able to pursue that and also share that this is what it's required. Sometimes you're not going to get that yes, and sometimes it takes 3 years of asking and then three different kinds of coaches. So what was it about this one coach or this one teacher that really changed the game for you? How did they connect with you to really let you flourish?
Well, basically, one, he taught me theory. So I could sight read. I knew keys and modes and scales, all that kind of stuff. But he also, like, he had a ton of experience. You know, he came from the States and had played with some people like Ella Fitzgerald and things like that. And he really brought that sense on, if I want to do it, it comes from me. Like, he can't force me to learn. He can't force me to practice. And I remember one time I hadn't practiced and I skipped a lesson. And so it was like 2 weeks in between. And I came in unprepared, sat down, started playing. And he's like, what? Get out. They're like, what? He's like, pack up, get out, come back in. And he's like, that never happened. And don't ever play like that again. And so I really took that, you know, like it was really, you know, if you're going to do it, you have to put your effort into it. You can't sort of fake it. You can't call it in, as they say. And that really sort of instilled in me a work ethic. You know, like I went on to college and he helped prepare me for college. And I had like a 12-hour practice schedule. Every single day I practiced guitar nonstop, 12 hours. And in each day I was in a different key, all this kind of stuff. So it was pretty intense, you know, and he really helped instill, like, if I want it, I gotta put it in that time. Cause like, it's not just going to happen, you know? So.
Yeah. I think the biggest takeaway I took away from that was, he can't do it for you. No one else is going to be able to do it for you. You can guide them, you can nudge them, push them, kick them even, but like, you have to do it for yourself, correct?
Absolutely. And I see that within artists a lot these days. You know, we'll talk to them and about education and here's the steps, and they'll go, oh, that's cool, but I'm not going to do that. And you know,
yeah, no time for that.
Yeah. And it's tough because 4 years later, you see they haven't really progressed. Sometimes they haven't gone past where they were before. So yeah,
it's a decision they've made for themselves.
Yeah. You got to do it for yourself, and no one else is going to do it for you.
In your time in the industry itself, maybe it's not as an artist, but what is one of the first lessons that sticks out to you from the music industry?
First lessons? Well, in college, I normally don't swear in these, but I'll probably swear a little bit. Our second year, we had a new music head, and he came in, he goes, there's two rules. Number one, get it right the first time. Number two, don't fuck up.
Hey.
And he goes, that's it.
No pressure.
No pressure. And he framed it then as like, okay, let's say you got hired for the gig. You're going to be the backup band and it's going to be on, say, like late night. And that's like a live performance recording. But you're the guy that shows up out of tune or you don't know your part. You're off key, off time. How are you going to find work after that? So he framed it in the sense that as a musician and a lot of what we were going through in school is a hired gun, like a sideman. You're hired for the show. You got to show up and you got to like deliver, and there's no room for mistakes. There's no room for screw ups. You know, your next job is going to be based off of your last job. And if it screws up, like it's all these screw ups, you're not going to get it. So that was the thing that really instilled in me is just, again, elevation of that work ethic that was built off of my guitar teacher. You know, it was kind of like hearing it again in a different framework, but professional.
Yeah,
it really, really stuck home. And so, like, I've been really hard on myself, but I'm very hard and diligent in the work that we do. In like put the time into it, put the effort into it. You know, like, don't go 78%, go 100%. You know,
so do it if you're gonna do it. Do it all the way.
That's it, you know.
If you don't like it, try something else. But you've done it, at least.
Yeah, and I feel so many people haven't justified what they're doing enough by saying, like, by really being able to go, yeah, I did give it 100%. Like, a lot of times it's, I'll see is like, man, you could just go that little extra effort and so much could change in your career, you know? So
very true. Is there an example of a time where you've seen where they just kind of push just beyond, or is a major screw up and they've learned from that? Is there any time for you, or you've seen someone else go through that?
We probably don't have enough time in this call to go through all the examples, you know,
many mistakes. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like the one I keep bringing up, it's funny. I was managing a band and we had a potential investor. He was in town from LA and he was out at the show and he's like, we got to meet, really hyped about this band and like to get involved. I'll have 15 minutes tomorrow. I don't know when, so I'll have to call you and you're going to have to come to wherever I am because I'm going to go hop on a plane and leave. And that's our only window. Right. And, so, you know, I talked to the singer, like he's got to come to the meeting with me and be ready. And like the next day when I get the call, I call the singer, no answer. I leave a message and I finally get him and he's driving to go see his mom. And he's like, well, you know what to say in the meeting and you can deal with it. I'm like, this is a guy who's about to invest thousands of dollars in your band. And you're the singer, you're the face and the voice and the star. The selling point is not me. The selling point is the star. You got to be there. And he's like halfway to Barry at that point. And so I had to sort of backpedal and justify. And, you know, we still were able to get a deal done, but not the deal we wanted. And you know. It made for a very weird start to this new business relationship.
Were you hesitant to like continue working with this artist because of just that one situation? Is that almost like a red flag? Bow.
Yes, but there was so much in motion. Like we had other sponsorships in play and we had just signed to a boutique record label that was distributed through Universal. The thing that's hard with music is it's once you're in, it's hard to peel out because there's so many different layers that you're involved with.
Fair.
Yeah, but you're right. Red flag.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to deal with red flags. Okay. What would you change in the music industry itself? Is there anything?
Well, it's an interesting thing. Like when I was coming up, it was funny because it was totally different system than there is now. I grew up in Alberta, but this was the same pretty much everywhere. During that era, you could only play cover songs. You were not allowed to play originals at all. Not allowed.
What? Yeah. That's so backwards?
Well, it is so forwards to a degree, right? So if you think of it like this, so all the bars across Canada for the most part is cover bands and we would play 3 to 4 sets a night and we would be there for about 5 nights, like Monday through Saturday, we'd be there, or you get a back 3, which is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They were attached to hotels. So you're put up in a hotel and you stay there all week, play these songs. None of the bars had sound systems or lighting and you had to bring that and your whole crew. So the thing was, Saturday night after the show, which everybody goes, that's a party night. Nope, it's a teardown night. We had to tear down all the gear, pack the bus, get on the bus, and then drive to the next gig, which could be 8 hours. And then Monday was setup day, which means set up the entire PA, the entire light system, get sound check in order and go. Usually Wednesday through Friday were the party nights. So the thing is, in a very short period of time, you learn what it takes to run a show. When you're playing covers, you get to know what works and what doesn't with an audience. So you can read an audience real quick and you're not under the pressure. These are all hit songs. And then you go, why is that one not working? Right?
Interesting.
And when you play every night, you get to be really, really good. And when you're playing nothing but hit songs, when you get to write songs, you kind of go, oh, this is what makes a hit song, right?
Right.
couple of examples. Two guys in Slash's band right now were on that circuit, the drummer Brett Fitz and bassist Todd Kearns. Guitarist from, well, basically Age of Electric came out of that whole scene. They were actually called Electric, which is cult cover band, because Electric album. Kurt, the drummer, went on to be in New Pornographers. Ryan, the guitarist, went to be Limblifter. Brett Bamford's guitarist was Robin. He was an AC/DC cover band. Five Finger Death Punch, their guitarist was in a cover band. So like all these musicians who are really good have gone on to do really great things in the business. So the thing is, then you insert your originals in the covers and people think it's a cover, but they learn it's your song and you've got an audience. Because the other part too is all the bars were for the most part fairly busy because people were going out to bars to just hear bands. Indie artists, and part of it, here's the part that is really good. There's a framework. There's an A circuit, a B circuit, and a C circuit. And it's kind of like you had to do this to get to the B circuit, and you had to do this to get to the A circuit. So there was structure, right? Get an agent. You have to get a road crew. Get a bus. Get sound and light system. Get your set list in order. Get the gigs and all that. It was a very good learning system to prepare you to be in a band that's your own original music. Where nowadays, I feel there's no framework. Like, all the artists are like, what do I do? How do I do it? And I half the time,
yes,
I'm
a very common question.
And half the time, I'm like, you don't even know how to put together a live show, right? Like, structure, like, what song goes into the next song? And you're like, I used to, with the bands I managed, we would put a video camera at the very back of the room, static on a tripod. Because often when people go, oh, I videoed my set, they have somebody like right up in their face and they're not watching the audience. We would put it at the back and we'd watch it and go, what song does everybody go to the bar and grab a drink? Because they're not interested in that one. Stop playing it. What song does everybody go outside to have a smoke for? Right? Or, what at the start of the show, all the people are at the front. What song does it start where they leave the front? Right? We study these things to make it so that get rid of all the weak points. And now your crowd stays throughout the entire show. And if not, it grows intensity. I find artists don't even think of it in that framework these days. When you're working for money and getting paid for money, like we were in a cover band, it was our job to entertain people. And if they weren't, we would get a call the next day from the agent who got a call from the owner or manager the night before saying, this band's got to fix this, right? I'm losing my audience during this part. So we can't have that. So you really get to know how to work the crowd and what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. How do you propose that we change this like today?
I actually have a framework that I've worked with artists and it works almost every time. And it goes against the grain of what a lot of artists think about. And so a lot of them go, oh, I don't do that. So it's real easy. Play the same bar in your hometown and figure out what best, like, I'll frame it this way. And it kind of goes back to college. I like the word best. I love that word. So if you think of it, play at the best venue for you. Why would you play anywhere else? Wear the things that make you look the best on stage as a band, as a unit. Why would you wear anything else? And then play your best songs in the best order to get the best results from your audience. Why would you do anything else? So the thing is, when you look at it that way, you're constantly working out the weak points and adjusting to get to best, as right. best as you can, right? And that's where you're going to get the best results. Because there's so many times I see artists where it's like, song we're going to play next. They don't even know.
And yeah, it drives me insane.
Drives me insane, right? Or like it just sort of like the kind of approach it loose. And I get that as an artist. You know, you want to have that loose feeling, but there's so much competition. There's so many bands out there, so many artists out there that are competition. Yeah. And you know, a lot of times, like I'll talk to artists like, do you like what's on top 40? Do you listen to like the top charting songs? And most of the time they're like, I hate all those artists. Yeah, but they're successful.
There's a reason they're at top 40.
They're yeah. the reason they got there. And a lot of times, I'll be honest, it's kind of like they're easy to work with. Right? Hey, you should
is
do
that what it is?
Yeah. Well, think about how we
like curious.
Well, let's say a manager says, hey, you should wear this. Nah, I don't think, as opposed to, yeah, okay. Hey, we've got this sponsor, like this, these running shoes. Could you wear them? Sure. Where so many artists are kind of like, oh, I don't know. Should I? Next, the other style. Artist has already taken it. The other artist has already taken that spot. Opportunity is passed.
It's quick.
Yeah. Right. And so a lot of the people are like, hey, work with that producer. Okay. Hey, work with that. Okay. Hey, we should do that. Like, and I'm not saying everybody needs to be that. It's about when you're surrounded with the right team and people that have your best interests, work with them and it can be a lot faster. I've just dealt with so many artists and they're great. Like I love them all, but some of them have been the downfall of their career by questioning every single step so much that the step doesn't happen, that they've put the barrier up and it's like, well, someone else has already gone around it, you know, and worrying about
it. Is it too late for these artists?
No, never.
What can they do to adjust? Final question before we go on to the next segment. What can they do to adjust and like escape this?
Be open to things. Be open. And like, it comes from you. So really evaluate what you want and who you want to be as an artist, but then be the best of that artist you can be. Because there's so many times people show up at shows and they're just showing up and you know,
your image.
Yeah. And I would say one thing that has happened that has been a big impact is, back in the day, when you were in a band, you were in a band. And that was like a gang. And it was like, you know, there's only one Motley Crue, one Led Zeppelin, and so on. Now, and I get it. People are like I've tried to book certain bands. And like, well, I got to find out who's available on what day. I've got my DJ gig on Wednesday. My acoustic thing is on Monday. I sometimes have to fill in for a different band on Fridays. And it's like you're so fragmented that the concentration isn't in one place. And you, how can you be the best of that one place when you're so all over the place? And as a fan, when you're trying to define yourself, you know, like some of the stars, when they come up, it's like that's who they are 100%. And, you know, it's kind of like if you looked at the Beatles, when they started, they all wore suits and had similar haircuts. There wasn't one guy that showed up and said, I don't want the suit today. I'm going to wear like jeans. Is that cool?
That wasn't an option.
Wasn't an option. Elvis, when he was coming up, he wore the shades. He had the cape. Right?
Yeah.
And did he ever just show up and go, yeah, I didn't do my hair today. I don't care. Right?
Could you imagine? Nah.
No.
But that, you make a strong point and like, people should realize that. They start from the beginning and they grow with that. You don't just like, oh, I'm famous now. I'm successful now. Let me do these things. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Well, think of Prince. But he owns a color. Like if you go purple, it's like, you know, Prince, you know?
Yeah. It's wild.
So that's the thing is if you look at all the people that are at the level, like that high level, they all show up all the time.
Yeah.
And the funny part is they're not allowed to not show up. Like the second somebody doesn't show up properly, it's in the press. Everybody's like, especially nowadays with social, it's like, oh, did you see what they're wearing?
Yeah.
You know,
kind of toxic, not going to lie.
Totally toxic.
On that note.
Totally toxic.
Yes, definitely toxic. But on that note, we're going into the speed round.
It's the speed round.
It's the speed round.
Yeah, that was a terrible
take. Oh, I'm not saying that again. Okay, we are now into the speed round. What I'm going to be doing here, Daryl, is throwing 20 questions at you at rapid succession. You have 3 seconds, less than 3 seconds, to respond to each of them.
Oh,
if
no.
not, Grumpy Sun Guy will buzzer you.
Oh, I'll probably get a lot of buzzers, but here we go.
There it is. That's the buzzer in the background. But if you think you're ready to go, let's get started.
Hit me.
What is your favorite city?
Toronto.
What do you do when the internet breaks?
Go outside.
Dead or alive, who would you like to have dinner with?
Lane Staley.
What is your all-around favorite person in the world? Or who?
I got like 10. Martin Atkins is one. Robert Singerman, somebody people that wouldn't know, is the other.
Okay, what is your favorite social media platform?
Instagram.
What is your favorite activity to do?
Travel.
The next round is on me. What are you having?
Sorry?
The next round is on me. What are you having?
Old fashioned.
Nice. All Indie Week events are online.
Yes, indieweek.com.
They're only online.
Only online, yes.
Correct. Is this the best interview you've ever had so far?
So far today.
Squished it back on me. Do you prefer adventure or leisure?
Adventure.
How many Indie Week events are there per year?
Now there's about 6 to... Actually, we do every week, so I'm going to say 60.
52.
60.
Oh, plus the other ones. Got you. Okay. If movie is to watch, then Netflix is too.
Sorry, say that again.
If movie is to watch, then Netflix is too.
Chill.
Hey, do you have any nicknames, Daryl?
D, Rogue, Drog.
D, Drogue.
Yeah, those are the three main ones.
All right, D.
Everyone calls me D.
D, do you think musicians and artists need to leave Canada to make big money?
Yes.
Is water wet?
All the time.
Make the first sound that comes to mind.
I'm going with silence.
How would you rate the Robin test footage scene?
Sorry?
How would you rate the Robin test footage scene? Yeah.
1,000%. It's amazing.
Super immaculate. Hey, I'm looking forward to that.
What's your
favorite meal?
Favorite meal? Depends on where I am. I tend to have a favorite meal per country. Bangers and mash in Ireland and steak in Brazil for Brazilian steakhouse.
Ooh, okay. Who's an artist that you currently find the most exciting?
Canadian, if it's an indie band, I would say Harm and Ease, rock band. Crownlands is another one. And I would throw in Eddie Vedder's daughter. I don't know if you've heard the soundtrack to Flag Day, but she has a song and it's actually really awesome. Olivia Vedder is her name.
We'll have to check them out.
Yeah.
Awesome. And final question. Can you imagine a world without music?
No, it'd be too quiet. And my ears have tinnitus, so it'd be ringing all the time.
Can't live with tinnitus. That's unnecessary or unnecessary.
It's the speed round.
That was the speed round.
Yeah, that was a terrible take.
We made it. Is there anything that you would like to justify from those questions?
Just trying to be as honest as I can. So I'll let them be as they are.
I have one thing I would like to justify in the speed round. You said artists, if they want to make big money, they have to leave Canada. Can you just break this down a little bit more? Why do you think that is?
If you think that the population of Canada fits in California itself, there's a whole lot more people outside of Canada than there is in Canada. So like UK has twice the population and it's an island. Brazil has multiple times the population. Mexico has multiple times. So essentially it's kind of like if you could make 10% off of a population, Canada is at 30-ish million. I would go for 10% of UK over Canada. I would go 10% of Germany over or Japan. Wow. Or India or Mexico or Brazil. So the reality is just simply is this, is Canada and music is an export nation. We always are exporting music. So if you think, and it says something about Canada as we are world leaders in many genres. So think of this. I'll do a speed round real quick. Celine Dion, AC with Michael Bublé. We've got David Foster in AC as well. Diana Krall is jazz. We've got Bryan Adams, Sarah McLachlan, Sum 41, Nickelback for the Rock, Billy Talent now as well, Shania Twain for the country, Avril Lavigne also is the punk. So we've produced all these massive, massive artists. And right now, we're killing it because we always have top three in the top 10, Drake, Weeknd, and Bieber. And they're massive. And they've all been massive outside of our country, which in turn always turns into huge popularity inside our country. So the thing that often doesn't work is really try to build up only in Canada, because that means you're not huge elsewhere. And even when you become big in Canada, unfortunately, that doesn't translate anywhere else. So think of Blue Rodeo, Tragically Hip, did all right outside of Canada, but really not the level that you'd think.
The others that you listed, yeah.
Yeah. And one band that's a huge example is Bare Naked Ladies, where they'd got to a certain point within Canada, as big as they could go. And then I didn't hear about them for about 5 years. And I thought they were done. But what had happened is they had actually moved to the States and were working the States, and then had the hit with If I Could Be a Millionaire. That went huge. And Canada became huge again because it was huge elsewhere. So
so the crowd wasn't gone. The crowd wasn't gone.
Yeah. So it's not to be a put down on Canada, but just the reality is there's more people to purchase music, listen to music, and consume your content outside of Canada than there is inside Canada. And if you're thinking of touring, man, it costs a lot to tour Canada. We're so big as a country.
Just 'cause of distance.
Distance, right. Yeah.
Yeah, where, that in itself doesn't make sense.
Yeah, like UK, you could travel by train to Manchester, Birmingham, Liverpool, London.
Yeah.
All that stuff, yeah. So.
That's huge. Time and energy, it's huge, yeah. That's a very, very well thought out response. Thank you for sharing that with us.
It's a speech that I do all the time, so it was, yeah, I do it all the time.
Natural, yeah. Then. I love it. Well, now it's the Go Produce version. We've got What's Your Take, Daryl?
What's your take?
Say what your take is.
What's your take?
Let me hear you say.
What's your take?
Can't hear you now.
What's your take?
Hey, this is awesome. I love these. I love all these little bits. This is the first interview I've had all these little bits of music in between. Awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome. We.
Can you tell him?
Big shout out to the Grumpy Sound Guy.
Severely underpaid for my job.
He's not lying. The sad thing is he's not lying. But we did have a great time getting together as a little group here. We just jumped into the studio and we each just pitched in a couple little vocal samples, whatever you want to call it, and we built them. So we're having some fun with it, and it's good to see that you're enjoying them too.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great.
Yes. What's your take? We're back to open discussion, not the speed round anymore, and essentially we're just looking for your wisdom. The theme for this episode. The theme for this episode is uncovering the true potential of the independent artist. A lot of the times, as you mentioned, we don't necessarily know what to do or when to do it or who to be talking to. But the reality of the fact is independent artists, creators for that matter, have so much potential. Humans have so much potential, but like we need some guidance along the way. And this is where you come and provide this. So I'd like to start What's Your Take with knowing that we have established that Indie Week is an online music conference, which includes keynotes, panels, international networking opportunities, workshops, mentorships, and it has also existed for 18 years. How would you describe your experience with the various partnerships that you've had over the years, mainly in the perspective for artists securing partnerships in their future?
Hmm. Okay, that could be looked at a whole bunch of ways in the world I'm in. I would say if you're going into a partnership, make sure the other person gets more out of it than they thought they were going to get, like over deliver. The couple of things that a lot of artists sort of miss is that it is a people business. So when you're dealing with a person, treat them like a person. And as well, they do have expectations. If you over deliver, they probably will come back to you the next time they need something. So a lot of the times about getting hired or building business is each partnership, you want it to last. You want to build on it. So it's kind of like, let's say if in a year you're going to get five partnerships, you want to have 10 next year because the five remain and are ongoing. The next year you keep five or build five more. By year three, you're at 15. And that's building business. And I feel that the art of that relationship building is lost. And often it's kind of a one-time deal as an artist go on to like the next one-time deal. And they just, that's like, this is where you build momentum, you know, and right. Things get easier with the more people you have on your side. I've just seen it so much.
It gets exhausting if you don't maintain and build on those relationships. If you're doing those one-off deals every single time, it's not sustainable. So I like the direction where you've had to build over time. But let's rewind to the very beginning. How was it like then? What kinds of obstacles did you have before you had any of these real partnerships?
Tons. First off, in Toronto, there was two other festivals and conferences. So we were getting compared all the time when we're trying to be different. And then as well, if we're thinking partnerships, there's already established partnerships with those as competition. And so for instance, if it was like a liquor company, they have only so much budget for a territory for a time period. And so if it's already allocated, that means you don't even have a chance. So, you know, a lot of people had to, like, we had to basically define ourselves. We had to get so that people had confidence in us, and we had to be consistent. And it took us about 5 years where, like, it, you know, people understanding what we are doing, especially when we started, the whole point has been discovery of new artists. So if I said, hey, we've got a new conference and festival, and people go, who's playing? Well, new artists, you wouldn't have heard about them. The point is discover them, come to discover, yeah, right? Yeah. And so a lot of people would just have a hard time with that in the industry, because a lot of times it's all about names for a lot of people in the industry.
Did you find that at the beginning, perhaps when you didn't have a team around you or like people that you could rely on, it was more challenging to do this marketing and build this awareness? Perhaps this is when you decided that you needed to start building a team. How did you come to that? And then after that, what did you split with them if you couldn't pay them? Was it equity of your idea of the company, or how did you navigate that?
Well, starting it was actually quite easy. We were, I kept it pretty manageable. I think we were six venues. And I think we were 40 artists the first year. And I was booking a venue at the time, so I knew all of the, I knew all of the artists really easy. So that part I didn't find hard at all. And people were really going out to discover bands. So the bars were all busy, and it wasn't that hard. You know, I find nowadays it's harder in the sense we're up against algorithms and social media not being organic. People don't put up posters anymore. And people don't even advertise in newspapers anymore. Even in the entertainment weeklies, there used to be live concert listings people would follow and all that stuff, but not anymore. So it's actually more difficult these days than it was back then. So if anything, it's all about learning social media marketing these days and getting word of mouth out there.
Have you seen any interesting guerrilla marketing techniques being used today?
Oh, there was one last couple of weeks I saw. I think I'll talk more of strategy. It's more when you can do something that's physical that matches digital. So example is an artist in the UK. I used to manage him. He has new album coming out. He signed over 1,000 albums and was able to sell them at a higher price point because they were signed. So imagine if you just added like $10 extra to get a signed copy. Most people go with that. 1,000 people buy it. That's $10,000, right? And then he did a contest where he signed a guitar and was giving a guitar away for people who purchased. So another incentive to purchase is you might win a guitar signed by
a raffle signed, right?
Yeah. So selling more merch by giving away stuff.
Guerrilla marketing techniques are very intriguing, and I want to spend some more time looking into that. But that's quite interesting. To sum up this What's Your Take segment, because we're getting a plethora of good information, but we got to keep it going as well.
You bet.
I would love if you could give us a quick 30 seconds on your big events throughout the year and going virtual. Just a little summary. I know you said you've got like 60 of them, but we'll talk about the weekly.
Sure.
So just the other main ones.
All right. So basically we do 4 online conferences. February is Screen by Screen, Music and Tech. So think AI, VR, blockchain, digital merch. Indie 101 is April, and that is for emerging artists and business. So it's really education based. Music Pro Summit is September, and that's high level discussions. Like we had Deezer, Spotify, Twitch, high level discussions. And then Indie Week is our flagship, and that is November. This year it's November 9th through 13th, and that's where we bring everyone together. We have a lot of the conversations that we carry on from the other conferences, but we also include a big international element. So meeting with international business delegates.
That is so much. And each of those links can be found under indieweek.com, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And they all have their own links as well. So listeners, just so you're not overwhelmed with all that, each of those links will be in the show notes. We will share that with you. I very much encourage you to check that out. I'm going to be trying my best to attend as well because I'm like, this is essentially what I've been looking for and why Go Produce was created, to find this kinds of stuff. So do not sleep on this opportunity. I did say we're going to talk about weekly a little bit as well, Indie Weekly. So can you summarize that too? And then I've got another question from the back.
Sure. Indie Weekly, we wanted to bring together people online as a community as we go through this weird time, but also be able to educate and connect. Indie Weekly is Tuesdays at 4:00 Toronto time. Sometimes we change it because it might be an international guest and their time zone's different. But people tune in from around the world and everybody can chat in the sidebar and share information, collaboration, songwritings come out of it. It's free, and that too can be found at indieweek.com.
Very nice, very nice. I'm looking forward to that. We actually had a couple of past guests from Go Produce on your roster as well. They're not all coming to memory, but as I was doing my research, I did see that.
Nice.
You've been sharing us a lot of wisdom, but for young professionals, when they release music, what do you see us doing wrong more often than not? And how can we get better?
I think there's probably about 3 or 4 key points that really is a big error. Number one is not giving enough lead up time. If you think about it, and this may be dating when this interview is, but the Batman trailer came out like today or yesterday. Black Adam trailer came out, and that's with The Rock, and he's been promoting that for about a year, and that movie's not coming out for a year. So that's years of marketing to get to the one release. I always look at, like, you know, I go back to that word best of who's doing the best, and I think Marvel is, and they release the dates years in advance before the movie's going to actually take place. And they build the story leading up to it. when they announced, like, hey, Black Panther 2 is coming out in 2024. Who's the director? We don't know. Producer?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, who's going to be in it? We don't know. So I think.
But I'm already excited.
Yeah. But they released, yeah, like, illustrations of the costume, photos and video from behind the scenes. And then they do make announcements. So-and-so added to the cast. And then how many trailers are coming out leading up to it? And the first poster is just the logo. Who cares? You know? So I think a lot of people work to perfection, and those details get in the way of talking about it, of releasing info about it, to the point that, okay, I'm done. I need it out now, like next week. How fast can this be out there? And they try marketing after it's out. And that's like nobody's sitting there waiting, like, oh, this song's coming out tomorrow at midnight. I can hardly wait for it. No one cares. You got to understand, nobody cares. So you have to make them
not
care.
Not even one.
Nobody cares. Yeah. So you have to. You have to do it ahead of time. You have to build the story so that they're part of it. You know, like how many times people go, I saw that band in a small bar first before anyone else. So you want to get that feeling in your release. Like, oh, I knew about that. And there's ways to do that. So one, it's the marketing, the lead, and the part of it is you need proper lead up. Then the other thing is people think I'm going to, so many artists I talk to, their plan is release one song a month. And I'm like, well, now there's no lead up for the song. And there's constantly, like, one song's not going to promote the other. Right. So if anything, to stretch it out, I look at it as, and the advice I give is look at that one song as many pieces of content. So think of it this way. I'm going to work on, say, an 18-month plan, right? Now, there's going to be even more lead up prior to that, but when I release, or really looking to release, I would do an instrumental version. I would do a Spotify mix version. Back in my day, there would be a radio mix, meaning no guitar solos, cut the intro, make it radio friendly. But I would say make a Spotify friendly mix. People don't want the big intro. They want the hook and all that kind of stuff. And then do the long play mix that's got all the extra stuff and can be 6 minutes long or whatever. Do a remix and do a collaboration with somebody else. So here you have one song, but you potentially have 8 different versions of it, and you can release it over a time of 18 months. So you're...
Jeez.
Right?
And man, that's extending one project for real.
And what it does is it keeps the story of the song going over 18 months. Right? Now think of it this way. Once you release that initial part and you start that timeline, 3 months later, you release a different song and you start a similar timeline with that song. So if you think about 2 songs, I could potentially have 16 pieces of content out over 2 years. And you're really focused on the marketing of each of, like the main milestones, not necessarily all of them, but like, this collaboration with an artist from Brazil singing in Portuguese, I'm singing English. Maybe their market will gravitate because he's on, or they're on that song. And so now your song's relating to people who speak Portuguese, and you've got your audience, and that's, so now you're kind of doubling up, like just really thinking how your content can work for you. And the part about the instrumental, there's a couple of things. And this came from Terry McBride, manager of Avril Lavigne and Sum 41, who I think is a marketing genius. With Avril Lavigne, what they did is they released a lyric sheet with an instrumental video and said, you make the video. So here's the instrumentation. Here's the lyrics. We want to see you film it and like submit your songs. Well, thousands and thousands of fans around the world did that. And when they posted to YouTube, you know, Content ID tracks and monetizes your music. So, yeah. And if they're singing it in their language, that promotes it. And they did this before the actual release came out. So people are making up their melody lines, or they might have done a track that just had the melody line kind of in it. But
yeah,
it's before the song came out. So this promoted worldwide before the song came out.
Damn. Terry's got it going on, this guy.
Yeah.
Or girl, I don't know.
Next level up, guy. Next level up.
Got
it. He's like, and this was in the time when CD sales were declining. He's like, how do you increase sales in a declining market? He's like, we had Avril Lavigne sing in 15 languages. So when it came out, it was a single per country that spoke in their language. So number one in Japan, number one in Thailand, number one in France, number one in Italy, and so on. And he said, the only languages that we couldn't do were all of the Hindu and Indian languages because their rhythms are different. So
interesting.
Yeah. But I was just like, Terry, you win. You just like win.
Yeah. So, well deserved, my dude. Sheesh.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. That's great. was not expecting that amazing response. We do have one more quick segment. Two more questions from our very loving fans. This next segment is called Clear the Air.
Clear the Air. Let's stop recording.
All right.
Cut.
So,
cut.
Clear the Air. We have a smartest. His name is Brad. Big shout out to Brad. He does a lot of great photo and video work, and this is his question.
Hello, Daryl. My name is Brad. What is the best way to make your way onto Sounds Canadian Playlist by CD Baby?
Oh, that's a great question. And that's an easy, that one's an easy one to answer. First, it's we've got an Instagram account, CD Baby Canada, and we've got links in the bio, and basically there's a form that you just fill out your information. We update it once a month, so it's best to get it in by the third week of the month. And we look at it all. The one thing to note is we try to be as diverse as possible. So what that means, though, is if we get like an onslaught of pop songs, there may be less room just because of the volume that we're getting. So, but we might get only one instrumental song. So we want to include that genre as well. So, but although we've been getting a lot of instrumentals lately, which is pretty cool. But yeah, it's just submit every month. And if you don't make it on, submit the next song. Like, it just, timing is a big factor.
Try again.
And yep, it may depend on what's happening that month too.
Of course.
Yeah. So we might lean.
Don't take it personally if you don't get, you know, selected as an artist, you know.
Yeah.
They playlists have their agendas as well. Like, everyone's doing their own thing. Just try again. It's all good.
Yeah. And if you are a CD Baby artist, we do a meetup monthly on Zoom. So that I can give some more advice and information direct to CD Baby artists.
Wow. Boom. That's perfect. Thank you, Brad, for asking that question. Grumpy Sound Guy, do you have a question for Daryl?
Yes, Daryl. I was going through your socials, and I was wondering what's up with the overpopulation of your stuff. Like, you're sharing stuff like there's no tomorrow. That caught my eye. I want to know if there's a strategy or if there's a purpose behind that.
Which account are you? Personal, Indie Week,
I think
CD
we were talking
Baby.
About your Facebook one, right?
Yes, mostly
it was
on Facebook.
I think we were looking at the Facebook Indie Week one. We were looking at it. There's so many different kinds of blog posts there, and like tips and tricks, like every hour almost.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, we've got an international audience, so and we have international partners. So as our partnership and audience has grown, like a lot of what you'll see is we're sharing content from Brazil. We're sharing content from Bangkok or Asia. And then as well, we've got our sponsors. So like Banzoogle, we're sharing that. And then CD Baby, we're always sharing their blogs, education.
Shout out Banzoogle, for real.
Yeah, they're so great. So that's it. Is we just have a lot of volume of stuff to share. And
go ahead, sorry.
Well, just the thing is, like, we've got our international audience, so people are tuning in at all different times of the day, too.
Right. So you probably have a dedicated team that's posting all of this frequently. You're not doing this yourself?
Yeah. No, I don't.
No.
It's funny because we get a lot of messages, hey, Daryl, and it's like, I don't even look at the Instagram for the most part.
Yeah.
So
fair. Yeah. But so you've got someone else doing it. Obviously, you are doing it to cater to the international audience. Do you find that the ROI is worth it, or do you find that maybe we're doing too much of this? What's going on there?
Well, a lot of things, people are always hesitant, and really the stats are like this. You'll get a spike and then people will unfollow, but you'll get a spike, but it's continually an upward curve. So right. And what we found is when we do less, the curve flattens. So, So it's kind of like, imagine if you do 20 posts in a day and you get 2 follows per, but you get 1 unfollow per, you're still up.
You're right. That's interesting. No. Okay. Awesome. Very, very, awesome. Thank you.
Well,
very
in that case, that's a flat line, but you'd think 3 follows per. But yeah. I've watched the insights, and it's the fact is you just got to do more stuff to get more things.
Our
numbers keep going up. So it's just whenever we actually see it, like when we pause or do a little bit less, numbers go down.
It'll dip. It happens. Oh, well. Grumpy, do you have any final words for Daryl?
Yes. Although this was a very long interview, I did not fall asleep as I normally do listening to Louis. So that only speaks wonders of yourself, Daryl. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for not being so grumpy.
Awesome. It doesn't happen that often. Daryl, do you have any final words?
Just for any artist, it's really sometimes I think everybody gets excited in doing things. It's good to just pause, define who you are, define what you want to be, and really focus on that. And I just really like that word best. Like, give yourself the best opportunity by putting in your best effort. And that's really what it comes down to.
That really resonated with me. I needed to hear that at this point in time. Any specific links or resources that you'd like to share right now?
All things Indie Week is just go to indieweek.com. For CD Baby, for our Canadian Instagram account, it's at CD Baby Canada. There's links in the bio so that you can submit your music to our Sounds Canadian playlist. Plus, we've got a few other cool things to submit to there. And if you're a CD Baby artist, we do a meetup once a month. And I hope you sign up for that because it'd be great to meet you and hear about you and your music and see where we can help. A big part is education and connection and collaboration.
Very huge, very huge. Daryl, thank you so much. That is it for the episode. Smartest, if you want to connect with me or other like-minded individuals who also listen to the show, then you're going to want to be part of our Facebook community. This is at goproduce.ca/groups. It's free. My name is Big Lou, and I want to see you there. We out.